As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Icarus for Reality with Shane Jones.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and in today's discussion, we have an all-out, free-for-all open conversation, from the paranormal to cryptids and even aliens. This one goes all over the place and has a touch of everything for everyone. But before we get into this fascinating conversation today, don't forget to follow Inquiries of All Reality and Open Minds Media on Instagram and Facebook. And if anybody is interested in a full list of podcast production services, you guys can shoot me a message through Open Minds Media, something I'm trying to do to make a little bit of extra money and continue on pushing to be able to do all of this type of stuff full time. And for anybody that's looking for video content, don't forget to go and check out Open Minds Media on YouTube and TikTok. And if you want to join the discussion, you can always become a member of the Open Minds Media Discord. Always awesome. It helps to grow and expand the show and community. And if anybody has an encounter to report, you guys can report it to ommencounterreports@outlook.com, or you guys can go to the link tree, and there is a specific submission form for that that goes to that specific email. But I don't care how big, I don't care how small it is, I absolutely loved to hear about your guys' experiences. And if you're relatively close to me, I might even be able to get out and possibly even investigate it myself. And if anybody hasn't already checked out Bizarre Encounters, highly recommend that you do. That's my other awesome show that I do with my co-host Oren over there. A lot of the time we deep dive into different stuff. So a little bit of a different format than this show, but definitely covering somewhat of the same topics. And we also do an extension of that called Bizarre Inquiries, which is our short form Patreon / once a month YouTube show. So if anybody wants to submit any questions for that, you guys can get up with me through social media and submit your questions so that we can discuss them on the show. And if you guys want to support the show, you guys can do so through the Open Minds Media Patreon. Over there, there's multiple tiers, semi-recently updated, a lot of awesome benefits. There's also a 7-day free trial for the $3 tier and the $5 tier. So definitely worth going and checking out. And I appreciate you guys for going and trying to support and help out my work. And you guys can also support the show through the Open Minds Media merch store. I will be dropping a lot of new awesome merch designs over there if you guys haven't already seen them on Instagram. If they're not up by the time that I'm talking about this now, then they should be up within the next couple of weeks. So just keep your eyes peeled over there because I definitely think that you guys will really, really dig those designs. And if you guys become a Patreon member, then you guys will get exclusive merch store discounts. So highly recommend doing both, of course. And of course, have to give a big shout out to all of the people that sponsor the show and / friends in the community. I know Squatch. Don't forget to go and check them out for all of your Squatchy gear needs. And you guys can also check out Cryptoteology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites. And you guys can also go and check out Snarly Yao for his fantastic beard and body products that smell of smoky cedar with a hint of mint, which is absolutely fantastic. I use the beard balm and the beard oil every single day. Absolutely love the soap. I think you guys will really enjoy it too. And if you guys are looking for events to attend, Dave / Snarly Yao puts on a lot of awesome cryptid related events. So if you guys are looking for stuff to do in the next upcoming months, he's always throwing events. So you guys can go and follow him on Instagram to be able to keep up on all the fantastic stuff that he's doing. And to all my paranormal investigators out there, don't forget to go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. A lot of new updates have come to that recently, expanding into an app, all that really cool stuff. So if you guys have any questions about that whatsoever, you guys want to pick up a device yourself, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there on Dimension Devices. He is the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions. And if you guys decided that you want to pick one up for yourself, don't forget to use the affiliate link that's down in the show description. Greatly goes towards helping the show, and I appreciate you guys for using that. And with all of that, everything that I mentioned is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, Jessica Carlozzi from Cryptid Bits. How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. How about yourself? Absolute pleasure to have you on the show after briefly meeting you at Squonkapalooza roughly about a year ago now.
Yeah, almost there. Thank you for having me on. I think we just had some cat interference. Sorry. I had another cat in the picture. It's a blast to be on. Thank you.
I'm surprised it took us this long to actually come around after that being last year. Like, I swear we were trying to set something up way sooner and it just happened to fall this far late. Like, I don't know how it ended up getting pushed that far out.
And no, that's all right. I mean, it's happening. That's fine with me.
So I guess a good place to start for anybody that might not be familiar with who you are, what you do, and as far as your show goes, why don't you let them know a little bit about yourself and a little bit about what you do on your show?
Okay, so I have a show, Crypt Tidbits with General Tidbits. It's a YouTube show right now. It's not on Spotify or anything like that. There's the closet door opening, like I mentioned earlier, when the cats are trying to get in there. Sorry. I've always loved like paranormal, cryptid, anything unexplained for so long that I think the people around me that weren't into it, that were so sick of listening to me talk about it constantly, we're like, you know what you should do? You should maybe start a show and talk to other people that want to talk about it instead of us. And so I did. I like to have guests on that anybody that's promoting something, like people that write books, people that do cryptid movies, people that have podcasts like yourself. I love doing the research for it, talking to people about their experiences. It's fun.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you learn something new every single time you have somebody on that you didn't know the week before.
So it's kind of like the same format that I do over here as far as like trying to kind of just promote everybody in the community while digging into all the odd stuff. And it seems like same with a lot of us podcasters slash people that do YouTube shows, that it generally seems like a lot of the time we have a lot to talk about when it comes to this kind of stuff. But the average people around us don't want to hear any of it. So we got to like push it into somewhere. But in turn, by doing that, you end up getting to talk to some of the most like substantial people in the community goes, as far as like other people that are actually writing books about it, going out and actually researching all of it. So it's like the quality of conversation gets better by not talking to people that aren't interested in it in the first place.
Yeah. I'm kind of glad in a sense that people were like, look, you need to like start talking to other people about this, because of the people I've met in the past. I've only been doing my show for a couple of years, and I've probably met just the most interesting, unbelievable people that put their whole life into cryptid research, into a paranormal research. Just, it's very, I don't know, inspiring, I guess is the word, not to be goofy about it, but it's inspiring to see people actually put their whole life's work into their passion.
I mean, honestly, that's inspired a lot of the stuff that I do too, as far as like, you know, you have a lot of these different authors on, artists, all this stuff. And then it makes you kind of want to branch out a bit more beyond just like the typical conversation. Exactly. You want to start collaborating stuff together to start creating books and, you know, YouTube video forum and all the other stuff. It's all just different ways of expanding the awareness and consciousness of all of these different types of subjects through different means. And also just being involved with the community and actually getting to talk to everybody too, it also kind of helps you get a leg up as far as like trying to do other things. Like the average person is going to be like, you know, I'm going to write a book on cryptids, but you start a podcast and then you start talking a bunch of people about it. And then you have those connections on people that tell you like, oh, this is exactly how I did and how I did it. And it seems like a lot of these like far off tasks that would have been so hard seem a lot more manageable because you actually have a community of people around you that are willing to help out and kind of lift together and everybody rise up together.
No, it's a little cryptid community that needs to support each other.
Honestly, yeah. And people don't even know how deep that goes. You end up going to like these conventions and stuff, and you know, you only see somebody once, or you'll do a show with them or something, and you get to see them in person, and it's like a whole other experience. You guys like run up and like hug each other. You end up hanging out the entire time you're at the event. Like, people don't realize how close you end up getting through just some of these like one-on-one conversations on podcasts.
Oh yeah. When I went to Squonkapalooza last August, like where I met a lot of you guys, it was like meeting like stars. I was like, oh my God, he's from the TV. Like, I was nervous coming up to certain tables because we have our own little, and it's not a click. It's just, you see somebody and you're like, oh my God, their podcast is amazing. I want to get their autograph type of thing and it's just that little community that's great for each other.
Yeah, you all end up like promoting each other's work and everything. And I mean, actually, funny story, I remember you as being the first person that ended up buying one of my Inquiries shirts that day. So I was like, hey, that's that person. So it's like that connection that I'll always have and remember was you were the first one to buy one of my t-shirts that day.
I'll get out. Your shirts were awesome. I loved the design.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I work hard on those. Actually, I'm working on a bunch of new ones too. So hopefully I'll have a little bit of luck at the next convention, because it seems like a lot of people don't necessarily gear towards like the podcast specific shirts, but rather the like stuff that's kind of geared around the topic. Like, they want something that makes like a reference to like Sasquatch versus like the podcast name with the Sasquatch. They just want like a Sasquatch and then a design, and the podcast is just kind of tiny in the corner.
Yeah, exactly. It's like just a little logo on the pocket.
Because people just want the Sasquatch. That's all they care about. That's why people come to the podcast. They come to all these shows. They just want to hear about Sasquatch. That's it.
It's like the poster child for cryptids is Sasquatch, and all the other ones kind of just get pushed aside. It's sad.
I mean, in all fairness, though, call me generic, but I'm going to always have to say that Sasquatch is probably my absolute favorite cryptid to investigate. But that's also just because I'm one of those woodsy type people. So maybe it's just kind of hand in hand. One thing that I've kind of noticed, at least when it comes to a lot of this weird phenomenon stuff, is that people kind of gravitate towards something that they associate with, as far as like the outdoorsy kind of guys always gear towards Sasquatch. The people that are into like urban exploring, for example, always get heavy into like the paranormal. And the people that are like sci-fi fans that, you know, enjoy reading like sci-fi, watching sci-fi movies, they're always the ones that I'm digging into the community. It's kind of like whatever you associate with the most. And I mean, it even kind of goes a little bit past that too, where, you know, some people will
only specifically get into the cryptids from their state, and then it'll kind of expand from there. But for the most part, it seems like if somebody says, this is my favorite cryptid, you can almost get like a profile on what type of person that is, depending on what the cryptid is.
What is your state's cryptid?
Dogman, which I do heavily research for Michigan. Okay. And we also do have a couple of like the different lake beasts. Like we have like the water panther. We have, you know, the same old plesiosaur water cryptids. And then we also have a lot of paranormal stuff in Michigan because there's a lot of burnt down kind of like abandoned built cities. And then on the other side of the state, we also have the Lake Michigan Triangle. So that spot, one of the corners where it intersects, is a spot that's pretty heavily known for UFO abduction. So we kind of have a touch of everything in Michigan, but they're all like complete opposite corners of each other, which is kind of funny to think about. And then, of course, Sasquatch, too. We do have Sasquatch stuff up north in the UP.
I'm not sure if there is a state or in the United States itself that hasn't had a Sasquatch sighting.
I mean, internationally, right, that goes to like, that goes to Australia, goes to Russia, that goes to South America. Like every place has their own buildup of that. I think that's one of those things that in America, we associated it with the West Coast just because that was where the first modern day sighting was. But as soon as you start digging into it, you realize that that wasn't the only sighting. That wasn't the first sighting. It's been underlying forever through Native American lore throughout the entire country. And people just kind of looked over it just because the first modern day one was on the West Coast.
Yeah, the first popular, I guess, well-known one was on the West Coast. So you don't get the ones that were in... I mean, I was shocked to find out there was a large majority of the Florida.
Oh, yeah, all the skunk ape stuff.
The skunk ape in Florida. So people don't automatically think Sasquatch when they think Florida, they think skunk ape. But it has to just be an offshoot of that to begin with.
I mean, you even get into like the boogers too and stuff like that, where you go into like down south and it's like they don't call it a Sasquatch, they call it a booger, but same description, same beast.
Exactly. Like the Yeti and whatnot.
Yep. I was going to say, I think they have a different name up in Canada too for like what they would call like their ape man type creature. I'm just brain farting on it right now. I know it's like a native name. But yeah, even up in Canada, it's a totally different name. Because the whole Bigfoot idea came from them originally. I think it was a bunch of lumberjacks. I don't remember exactly what year it was. It was like early 1900s, but they found like big footprints. And they ended up kind of getting the idea of Bigfoot. This came from a Bigfoot. And then that's where it kind of came into like being called Bigfoot. But before that, it was like that name was never a thing. Like Sasquatch is just one tribe specific. And like you got the Yowie in Australia, Yeti in the Himalayas.
Yeah. And then I guess it's in Canada. It's I'm definitely going to pronounce this wrong. Amoglis? Mowglis, an early name for Sasquatch is what they used.
I thought is that maybe pronounced like Mogwai or something? It sounds familiar to hear the word Mogwai.
It looks like it would be Mogwai, but just because there's an actual law in British Columbia that it's illegal to kill one of them if you see it.
I always love those weird laws because that means that somebody had to have seen something. Otherwise, like, why would that law have been established in the first place?
Yeah, somebody shot at something they saw and they were like, whoa, you can't kill the local Sasquatch. There's a law in the book now for that.
They're probably worried about them coming back and retaliating more so than anything. They're like, man, you shoot at one giant ape man and they're going to come back with 10 giant ape men.
Yeah, you can't just throw that out there and hope that it doesn't happen. Like, I'm surprised that's not a law in any of Vermont, Maine, Massachusetts, California. That should be a law in all the books.
Honestly, though, even if it isn't necessarily a written law, if one person was to shoot a Sasquatch one day, that would still fall under endangered species. So no matter what, if you actually had physical proof of a Sasquatch and you were the one that killed it, you'd still get busted for something under, again, just endangered species.
Well, that's what I had posed a question to one of my guests one time on my show was, if you had the chance and that was the only way you could prove it, would you take that shot?
I mean, honestly,
how else would you? Would you kill a Sasquatch to prove its existence?
I mean, half the fun is being able to theorize. So, like, I don't think I would do it because, I mean, I would want it to be proved in my own head, but I wouldn't necessarily need to have physical proof for everybody because even if you had physical proof, 90% of the people that are going to see it are going to see it through pictures online. So they're not going to believe it regardless. So when it comes down to it, it's like, if you have a respect for the creature, the animal, the being, whatever it happens to be, then you wouldn't kill it and you would just leave it alone and kind of see your sighting as like, that was special for you. You've been proven correct that you were right. And that's all it needs to go past. Cause like I said, there's no proving it to anybody. You can have a body right in front of somebody and they're still going to come up with any reason to try to make sure they say it's false, that it's not real, that you took a gorilla and then you, you know, did this stuff to it and you taxidermied it. And then you pretend like it's a Sasquatch. Like there's always going to be something to it. Now somebody disproving it.
Like AI and Photoshop, it's killed any type of proof or anything that anybody can bring forward to, I saw a cryptid, and they're gonna be like, that's Photoshopped. That, so it's so much harder nowadays too, if you did see something, to prove it to the world.
The even crappier part about it too is that it's like, even Polaroid, like you can edit a picture and then you can print it through a Polaroid camera. So even if you're using an old camera that can't necessarily be manipulated, people are still going to be like, oh, you can buy printers, you can do this, you can do that. So it's like, you still wouldn't even have physical proof, even if you're taking it with like a camera from like 1940 something, you know, like one of the quick shot cameras.
Yeah. It's ruined it. So that's, I mean, to what you said, you would just have to have proof for your own personal knowledge.
Because, I mean, even if you were like traveling around trying to say you had one, I mean, that brings up the whole thing with like the Minnesota Iceman, that, you know, there was the whole weird connotation behind that, that there was actually two versions of it. There was the original one that may have actually been an ape man. And then the other one that was after government intervention got involved, that it disappeared and the guy was still trying to make money off of it. So then he created a fake one. So it's like, we had a time where we could have theoretically actually had a physical body and proof of this thing. But on the other side of it, there is still going to be powers at work that are going to make it so that if you have that physical proof, they're going to do everything in their power to try to get it away from you. Even if it comes down to you have it stored in your garage one night and you come back the next day and there's this one that looks just like it and you don't notice the difference, that real one's going to get taken. Like people talk about like black government programs. I wouldn't be surprised if there's one specifically for protecting cryptids or hiding the existence of cryptids.
30, 40 years from now, it's going to come out just like all the alien, the UAP files just came out a couple of years ago.
Hey, that's all intentionally controlled release, though.
Celebrating that day.
Because there's going to be some agenda behind it. They're not just releasing the information just for the sake of releasing the information. Like there's a reason why they're going to do it in the first place.
And it was funny because what was it, like five or six months after that, Mexico had their hearings with the alien bodies that the gentleman found / possibly created. I mean, you can go either way with that, too.
I mean, that thing definitely looked like some paper mache.
Sadly enough, I wanted it to be something. I'm not a big aliens person. Let's get that out of the way right now. I believe in everything and anything, but aliens are a tough sell for me. So when I saw those, I was like, oh, that's crazy. Like something I've never wanted to believe in, never put any thought into. Like paranormal, cryptids, yes, anything. Sure. Conspiracy theories, Mandela effect. I'm a true believer in all of that. Aliens, I'm kind of like, I'm going to need one to knock on my door and try and take me before I believe that they exist. That's hard for me. So when the Mexican paper mache aliens came out, I was like, oh, maybe it's not aliens in the sense that everybody thinks. It's this type of alien that was just a strange DNA type of creature, and then it turned out it was yak hair and paper mache kind of bugging out.
Yeah, I'm honestly kind of surprised that you said that, because usually it's the opposite. Maybe it's just because of the way that like society is nowadays, that everything's geared towards extraterrestrials, interdimensional travel. But it seems like there's more people that exist that believe in the existence of extraterrestrials and aliens than probably, well, I don't want to say paranormal, because there's some pretty heavy following for the paranormal, but at least the average person that isn't necessarily into all these topics, I feel like they're more prone to believe extraterrestrials than the paranormal or cryptids. It seems like cryptids are usually on like the tail end of that list. I feel like it'd be aliens, paranormal, then cryptids.
Yeah. Mine's the opposite, I guess. Mine's, I will believe in any cryptid within a range of reality, which is kind of a strange way to, I will believe my real cryptids. Paranormal, without a doubt, because I've had so many experiences with that in the past. And aliens are low on my totem. Everybody around me, yeah, aliens exist. How can you not think they exist? How can you think that we are the only ones out there? I don't believe in aliens in the sense that they're flying around looking for us. I believe in aliens in the sense that it's, we see something that possibly could have been a time traveler from the future or coming into our reality. We see the ship, we see this, and then they just pop out. I don't think that's extraterrestrial beings. I just think it's possibly like a future glitch.
I mean, a lot of people get into that whole idea that the grays are actually like us from the future. Once it's gotten to a point where all the races start to like breed back into each other and there only starts to become one race. And then you get into the whole like transitional future, whatever it is, like the future where everybody starts kind of getting to a point where they start relying on technology. They stop actually like breeding with each other, but rather actually doing it through scientific intervention. And then at a certain point, you know, it would become to a point where like your body parts for reproduction essentially become obsolete. So then you kind of start gearing away from that because it's not needed in your evolution anymore.
Yep.
And that's always something that I've definitely brought into consideration when it comes to the grays.
I don't think that aliens in the general sense, like X-Files aliens.
I mean, even within that show, though, there's like a layer upon a layer that like you go through the first like five seasons thinking that it's like actual aliens. And then it comes to release that it's like this government organization that's just trying to make you believe in aliens. And then on the other side of it, it's like there actually are aliens. They just haven't actually contacted with us like people think they are. And instead, they're kind of doing their own agenda to try to do like trade-offs with the extraterrestrials and making everybody think that the extraterrestrials are doing it in the first place.
I mean, it's an amazing show, no doubt. Like, I celebrate its entire existence, and I rewatched the last couple seasons that came out, the older Mulder and Scully episodes from like 5 or 6 years ago. All amazing, great. The Mandela Effect one started me down such a rabbit hole. I ended up doing an episode on the Mandela Effect and getting balls deep into that, excuse my expression. But the alien portion of it, I always saw as the government controlling the thought of what aliens were for people, not aliens existing and us seeing them type of situation, which is weird for me to, I feel like I'm just, it's like a dirty secret that I don't believe in aliens, but I don't.
I mean, I definitely am one of those two-sided people on that I definitely do believe in extraterrestrials, even if they aren't necessarily extraterrestrial, but even possibly something that's coming from somewhere else on our planet.
Yeah.
But on the other side of it, though, I definitely don't think it's all that. I definitely think that there is government intervention, there's human intervention within it. And even within my own research, it seems like there's been a lot of cue notes where it's like, people have sightings, they'll have experiences, they'll get abducted, and they'll notice things like mask lines. And I've talked about it a few times on the show, but this whole concept of all of that started kind of taking off around the same time they're doing all of the psychedelic research. So I've kind of wondered if they created some type of psychedelic that isn't known to the general public, that they can essentially abduct people, run whatever experiments they want to do on them without any type of repercussion, and basically make them think that it was extraterrestrials or aliens the entire time when they're actually doing their own weird mind manipulating experiments. And even with like screen memories, like the whole layered screen memories concept that, you know, you'll see an owl and then you go back and then the owl turns into a gray. And then I feel like if you take another step farther, there's a possibility that that gray might turn into somebody wearing a government suit, wearing a gray mask. And it's just layers because they not only were doing the psychedelic research, but they're also trying to do mind manipulation research at the same time.
Like the guy that ended up throwing himself out the window. They covered that up. And then years later, it came to pass that it was the government feeding him drugs that caused his suicide. And the family actually finally got closure, I think, just a couple years ago. And this was in the 60s. They had taken an FBI agent that kind of was not pleased with the type of research they were doing and had to get rid of him in a way that made it look like that he was guilty about the research, and they drugged him and threw him out a window. And for 30 or so years, I think they told his family, oh, he was unhappy, he was depressed, it was suicide. And it I wish I had the name of this guy right now.
I mean, just in general, how many suicides are there that are definitely not suicides, that you start digging into certain things and then people end up going missing, or all of a sudden your complete identity gets erased, or, you know, you're just off the grid essentially, and they're trying to pretend like you don't exist in the first place. I mean, it seems like particularly when people start diving into grays, or, you know, start to use like government terminology of like J-Rods, that's when all the kind of weird stuff starts going on, that, you know, whether you believe in extraterrestrials or not, there's some kind of weird connotation to that. And, I mean, maybe the reason the government protects it so much is because maybe it's something that they created in the first place. Maybe it was some type of like clone hybridization experiment that they were trying to run, possibly, if they did find some kind of weird DNA and they tried to bring it back or something. Maybe it's humans that are not humans, but some type of humanoid being that existed here at one point, and then they tried to reclone it and bring it back out. But there's something weird government tied wise to grays / J-Rods in the first place.
And it seems the government always will kind of put just enough out to make whoever sees it or wants to talk about it, It's more like, oh, you're on the fringe. But and they're putting things out like for people to look crazy so that you disbelieve the people that see what the government's doing or get a glimpse of what they're doing.
Say they can't kill people anymore because that's too obvious. They got to completely discredit you. That's the route they go down.
Exactly. that's what happens now. You just get discredited and you get shunned by family, friends. I mean, the government can basically erase your house, your car, your life, your bank account, whatever they need to do to kind of put you in a situation where you're like, you know what? Maybe I was wrong. Can I have all my stuff back, please? Can I have my life back?
Or they'll do this thing where they'll dangle a carrot of information in front of your face that they know the entire community is going to be like, no, that makes no fucking sense. But you really think that you're onto something. So then they're just dangling like, oh, did you know this? Did you know this? Did you know this? And as soon as you bite the carrot, then they realize that information was just completely ridiculous and makes no sense, even though it seemed like it was coming from a good, credible source. And then in turn, by following that information, now the entire community looks at you like you're crazy because they know that that was like some type of psyop information in the first place.
Exactly. They just show you kind of just a little bit of the tip of the iceberg, and all of this, all the rest of the information they have is just so deep and hidden. It gives you a little bit to shut you up, I guess, for now.
I mean, even all the government employees that talk about this stuff, you start asking them direct questions and they're like, I can't answer that. I don't know the answer to that. I can't answer that. Yep. And it's like, can you not answer that? Or do you just not know the answer to it at all? Yep. And you guys are just trying to pretend like you know some stuff so that you could possibly bring in more information from other people that actually do know something.
Yeah. Or are they just afraid to say anything?
That's the other side of it too, is I guarantee you got to sign all these different contracts about what information you're going to disclose and stuff. Cause then it's like, at that point, why does anybody that's related to the government actually come out and do like presentations and talk at UFO events? Cause it's like, either one, the whole community is looking at you like a psyop, or two, you better give that good information that everybody knows that you have that you're holding behind, or three, again, just don't talk because you can't say the important stuff. So just sit down.
Well, look what happened with, the author of Behold a Pale Horse.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
I'm blanking on his name, but I'll pull it up. He had government information. William Cooper.
Yep, that's it.
So, yep, William Cooper wrote his book, Information About...
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
UFOs, information about government conspiracies, information about New World Order. He was shot over a parking ticket. Like, it was that simple. Like, they came on his land because of, it was something stupid, like a parking ticket or a speeding ticket, and he got shot. That doesn't happen to people that don't have a small bit of at least truth in their books and their writings.
That kind of has the same connotation as the whole, like, Epstein committed suicide in jail with no cameras on him. It's like there's too much weirdness around it for anybody to believe that whole story. Like,
and people, he was the type of person, like William Cooper was the type of person that was rough around the edges, I guess. So he had his land and he had no trespassing signs and he had this and he that. So his neighbors who didn't know that if this information was true or not, if he was crazy or not, oh, well, that's old Bill, like, got himself in a scuffle with the police. No, the FBI raided his house over a parking ticket.
Which doesn't even make sense to begin with. Like,
not a normal situation. So you kind of see, like, are they covering up information? Like, they give you a little bit. Here's a little bit of information. We hear some UAP papers, but then you said it's all redacted.
I mean, stuff like that too, I feel like is almost done to, like, show a message that it's like, everybody knows there's some weirdness to it, but basically what they're trying to say on paper, this is what happened, but read between the lines. And if you mess with us, all it takes is a parking ticket and we'll be there.
Exactly. Like, I think that might help with, I don't believe in aliens. No, of course not.
Yeah, what aliens? What are you even talking about?
No, we're here to talk about Bigfoot. But even like Bob Lazar, this amazing engineer, this amazing like scientist, and now he's shunned by every community because he worked on a UFO.
I mean, that's one of those ones, even within the community, it's a pretty hard split that people either believe him or they don't. But as far as, like, I go, I mean, I don't know any of this stuff for sure, but I kind of sway more towards the side of believing the guy just off of the simple aspect that he hasn't tried to make money off of anything, and he had his complete identity completely erased, and on top of the fact that if he was working in some lab like this doing all this crazy stuff, you think he would have blown up the story a bit more and said that he saw extraterrestrials, that he saw this, that he saw that, and he's like, no, I've never seen anything. He's like, the closest thing that may have been something is there was this really short, oddly shaped guy that I kind of saw walking through a door, but he's like, I don't know for sure. It just could have been like a really small guy. Like,
I mean, these people don't get notoriety from it. They become infamous from this type of information when they come out. So why would they?
I mean, even when he would like go out and like speak about it, because he had like a short period when he would like speak about it. And even from the money off that, he was like taking the money that they were trying to present him for doing presentations. And he was giving it to, I believe it was like underprivileged kids being able to do like science experiments and for like their science classes and stuff like that. So it's like, all I've seen on one side is the fact that this guy hasn't made anything off his story and that he's kind of just had to deal with the repercussions of it. But on the other side too, you still have the conspiracy side of it, that you have like the whole PSYOP thing, that the reason why this guy does this, the reason why he doesn't take any money is because he's actually is paid off by the government to promote a story, which is what a lot of people like to argue. So it's like, oh yeah, that's fine, he doesn't take any money. It's because he already has enough money because he made a deal with them years ago to release this information.
It's just, I feel bad saying like, I believe Bob Lazar, but I don't believe in aliens. Like, I believe everything that comes out of Bob Lazar's mouth. Because I want to believe everything that comes out of Bob Lazar's mouth. Just because, like you said, he didn't see aliens. So for me, he worked on something the government was having him work on that they found. It didn't have to be bodies. It's a type of ship that they found.
I mean, he described it as something that was way above its time, too. And everybody associates it with extraterrestrial / UFO stuff. But that doesn't necessarily mean that was even it in the first place. Because everything's compartmentalized when it comes to that kind of stuff anyways, where nobody knows what everybody else is working on in those organizations. So he could have, they could have literally had a piece of technology that came from a totally different government and they're trying to reverse engineer it. And there may not have actually been any extraterrestrial thing involved, but just because the piece of technology was so advanced, he assumed that it was that, but he never actually said like, this is extraterrestrial technology. Like it could have been like human technology that, you know, only one group of people have actually figured out or understand how to use.
Yeah, it's like you said, the compartmentalizing. I just watched Oppenheimer. It's you only know what you need to know to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you go into even just like the all the Hitler occult Nazi stuff too, and there was the supposed like Nazi bell, the Dieglocken. But you know, it could have been something that was so. Bob Lazar's stuff was way after that. So if they theoretically did have that technology back during World War II, who knows where it could have advanced to, you know, 30, 40 years later. It could have been a continuation on of that technology. So again, it could have been human driven. But then again, when you get into like the Hitler bell, there's still the double side of that one where they're like, was it something extraterrestrial they reverse engineered? Was it something occult they figured out? Like there's so many different avenues you could go to that it kind of just depends on what people want to believe. But it seems like with a lot of the occult stuff, it kind of gets into the same method of stuff that seems like magic. But once you have an understanding of it, it becomes a science, which is what I think a lot of the occult stuff is. Isn't necessarily an understanding of like magic or knowing how to use magic, but rather advanced types of science that have been passed down through generation that only a certain group of people understand. And it's science to them, but it's magic to others, where it's like even the MK Ultra stuff, like it seems like to me, like, all of the like weird mind manipulation stuff, more so than anything, is a really, really advanced understanding of psychology rather than it is like magically manipulating somebody's brain and perception.
Yeah, but to the outside, it's just magic to us. It's something that we don't understand. So when we don't understand something, we're like cavemen around a fire.
Pretty much.
it's just all, it's all magic to us because we can't see the other side of it.
Yep. And then what, the more you understand it, then science or magic ends up turning into a science. And the example I always use is like alchemy into chemistry. You know, it's just a matter of understanding. And it went from a complete woo-woo science to an actual recognized branch of science.
That's what I'm kind of hoping will happen with like, I don't know if I want it to happen or not with cryptozoology, that there is an explanation. Like I like it unexplained.
See, that's where I kind of bounce back and forth with like the paranormal, with cryptids, with UFOs, all of that. It's like, it'd be awesome to have it proven true where nobody could deny it anymore. But at the same time, though, then that takes away the fun of being able to theorize and actually figure the stuff out. Because it's like, once the mystery's gone, is it nearly as interesting at that point?
What's the next mystery at that point? We run out of mysteries after a while.
Hollow Earth. That's going to be the one that I always fall back on. That's like my always go-to. Hollow Earth.
I don't think I know. I'm not familiar.
All the different like possible caverns and different beings that could be living under the surface.
Okay.
Yeah, all the Hollow Earth stuff. That's
Hollow Earth. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I dive into that like super heavy. Just out of curiosity too, just because you were talking about the whole extraterrestrial thing and kind of like where your kind of belief stands with everything. What's like your like main focus as far as like being your favorite topic to research? And like what is it? Assumably a lot of people, they kind of gear towards what they may have potentially had experiences with. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, your main one that you're fascinated with is something you've had experiences with too, I'd absolutely love to like kind of hear your experiences that kind of formed your belief system in it.
So my fascination with cryptids honestly didn't start from an experience. It started from a book when I was 3-ish or 4-ish maybe. I read a book called Serendipity, and it was about a sea monster. And the moral of the book was, don't pollute the oceans. But what I got from it was, holy shit, there's a sea monster. What is this creature? Like, this is a one-off creature that nobody knows what it is. And it rolled into, I wanted to learn more about sea monsters. And I wanted to learn more about unknown creatures that existed that shouldn't have. And I completely got the wrong moral from the book, but it just started a lifelong fascination with like unknown creatures.
I mean, in all fairness, though, if people didn't believe in anything as far as cryptozoology goes, it seems like the most likely, no matter what, would be stuff that's in the ocean. Because, I mean, even diving into like more modern day stuff like the Kraken, it was a myth forever. Nobody believed in it. But now we're starting to realize that there is something to that. There's these giant squids. And I've kind of theorized
that. From the ocean, and they're like, holy shit, here it is.
See, I've kind of theorized a few times too that, you know, now we're doing a lot of treading in the water. So they kind of avoid specific paths because they know there's going to be a lot of boats and a lot of movement there. But back in the day, when you only had one boat coming across the water every couple months looking from underneath, more than likely they assumed it was some type of whale. And it seems like these giant squids used to get into fights with whales, whatever one was trying to eat whatever one. So assumably all of these Kraken stories of these ships getting attacked by these giant octopus / squids were more than likely these things just trying to attack what they thought was a big whale. Yeah. So they were trying to grab everything, flip it, break it apart. And these stories just kind of spaced out the more tread you have in the water, because when you have just a big wooden boat, easy to destroy. When you have these giant freighter metal ships, then they probably do damage to them hitting them versus like back in the day when they could just tear apart a wooden ship. It'd be significantly easier than trying to tear apart, you know, a couple inches thick of steel.
The sea is just the last place that you just don't know anymore. I mean, we can go into space. We can do whatever we want. Map the planets, you know. The sea is nothing that we're ever going to be able to control or map fully.
I mean, even if you map one area, it doesn't mean that stuff doesn't move. So you could map one area one day, but that doesn't mean that there's not a creature in it the next day that was over here where you weren't mapping.
And growing up, I loved just any type of sea creature and sea monsters. And that led me to like loving anything sharks, because sharks were the true sea monsters that you could still see and find.
I mean, there's proof of the megalodons. That's horrifying. A giant shark to begin with. Or massive. Megalodon.
Any type of sea monster is just, it's probable. You can't tell me it doesn't exist because you can't find it, because you can't find anything in the ocean on a regular basis.
And I mean, even like the plesiosaur concept, that people want to think that all these like dinosaurs died out, and not to get into the conspiratorial side of the whole dinosaur aspect of it, but you know, if there was some type of catastrophic event that happened and destroyed most of the stuff that was living on the surface, most people have theorized that things would have went underground. So if something was living in the water to begin with, then it could have theoretically been not affected to minimally affected by this thing in the first place. And especially if it was in certain parts of the water where, you know, maybe the meteor strike, if that's what you want to believe, happened in the northern hemisphere. This thing's in the southern hemisphere.
Like, if you want to believe there was a meteor.
Whatever you want to, I mean, people have so many different theories on it that, I mean, you never necessarily know what to go with. And even the whole meteor thing, it is technically a theory to begin with. Like, most stuff in science is theories. People can't prove it. It's just theories that, as we were taught them in school, they drop out the word theory and just start teaching it as its fact. Like evolution is technically a theory still. Big Bang, technically a theory.
It's just the easiest explanation turns into an explanation for it.
And then through indoctrination through schools, they can essentially make anything the standard idea of knowledge. And if you stray away from that at all, then you're wrong, because this is what the fact is, even though it was never fact to begin with. It was just an educated guess from what you have in front of you.
And that's why I like why there's more cryptid podcasts, there's more cryptid movies, there's more cryptid TV shows. Or I say cryptid in the general sense of like paranormal, aliens, Bigfoot, everything, because it takes people that were taught this in school. This is what you were taught. Gigantopithecus died out. There's no big apes anymore. There's no big Sasquatches. So then you have all these new things coming to light, and there's all these podcasts, TV shows, movies that are bringing it back up. So you have another option to believe something, and you have other people that believe it with you. You don't have to say, well, I learned this in school, so that's the end of it. You know, there's more stuff that you can, it's not a fringe society anymore, which is great.
Oh yeah, and it seems like it's starting to be more believed with a lot more information that we have. Like for the longest time, people would be like, oh, well, I've never found a body. Well, I've never done this for Sasquatch. And then now that people are starting to research it more, like, first of all, if these things are around, then more than likely they've been learning how to stay away from humans for years and years and years and years and years. And if there is an intelligence factor to them, the reason you're not finding bodies everywhere is because theoretically they could be burying their dead. And I've heard a few people that'll talk about finding like stacks, like the cairn stacks on top of a mound. And then they'll hear like, you know, something that would like alarm them if anybody was coming into the area, like, so then they'll start having like rocks thrown at them, sentries. That's what I was looking for. That'll be like up on corners and stuff. So like, for me, at least, it seems more logical that these things just have burial rites and then they just protect that. And I mean, to begin with, you can't dig into mounds because, you know, you don't know if it's a Native American burial mound. So, I mean, like, if you're just finding mounds all over in the woods and you can't dig into them, you don't know what's inside of that thing. I mean, researchers that have some type of technology to check inside of it without tearing it apart might, but that doesn't mean they're going and checking every single mound they find in the middle of the woods.
No, and a lot of researchers and scientists aren't going to do that because of the stigma of, oh, what are you looking for, Bigfoot? Why would you do that? That's not science. So they don't want to go out and like check these avenues because their colleagues, I feel like, it would be a mocking science for them.
Hey, and if you end up finding giant bones in the process, you're just going to have the Smithsonian come down on you.
Yeah. You're not going to be able to, and that's the thing. You find something, like say you go in your backyard and you dig and you find an artifact. That's not yours to keep. Somebody's going to come take that from you.
That's the other part too, is that if you find something in your yard, then your yard from that on until they figure out everything that's there is now confiscated. It's not your yard. You have no rights over it. They do whatever they want for it.
And I think that's why it's easier now, instead of, like you said, they could be buried. Like they could have had burial rights. The problem with us as a people, we're just putting houses on those, and we're putting parking lots over everything. So we're just covering up anything that we might find. We're taking the forest down. I'm not like a huge like trees, but what we're doing is we're deforesting everything. We're taking what we could be researching and we're just paving it. You're not going to find anything that way. So we can't prove that it exists because you just put a Walmart there.
I mean, it makes you wonder how much stuff could have just been covered up for the sake of not wanting to deal with it. Like you hear about all of these like horror stories about back in the day when they were building infrastructure, they would end up digging through into it like a Native American burial mound.
Yeah.
And rather than like acknowledging for what it is, they'd kind of just rebury it over in a hole over there and never say anything about it. So now it's like, if somebody owns property that they're trying to build a Walmart on, you know, and they find like a Sasquatch skeleton in it, you know, they go, I don't want to deal with this. Fill it in with concrete. Nobody will ever find it again. Build the fucking Walmart. We're not doing this right now.
Yeah, because if you find anything, like you said, in your backyard, that stops all production. That stops everything. They have to have archaeologists come down. They have to check all the science. They have to make sure that this isn't somebody else's land before they do it. So it's so much easier just to pave it.
It makes you wonder, too, how many people could have potentially found, not necessarily like Sasquatch, but just some type of like ancient anything in their yard. And rather than having their yard confiscated, especially these like farmers where, I mean, they could have like whole fields that were like burial grounds and not even realize it, but stumble on something on accident one day and they're just like, all right, I'm going to keep this pot for myself. The rest of it, cover back up with dirt. I'm not having my property taken from me because I need it to farm.
So many people, there's the Badlands. They found dinosaur bones. They found the actual, what happened the day the meteorite hit type of situation, like a day in the life of that dinosaurs. And they found it on a farmer's land. And now that is no longer the farmer's land. The Smithsonian owns it.
Mm-hmm. Because assumably they're not just going to take that area. They're going to take like the whole damn thing. So you could start off with like 20 acres. And by the time they're done saying, all right, we found something here. We found something here. We found something here. You might end up with like an acre and a half. Yeah. If they're not pushing you off your land and saying, here's this much money and you have no choice. You either accept it or we just destroy your house anyways.
We're taking it either way because we have rights to it.
Which is ironic because then it's like you American researchers will go to other countries. They'll find some like ancient Aztec item or some ancient Egyptian item. And then rather than it being owned by that land and those people that it's their heritage, they take it back to the U.S., put a museum here. So it's like, that rule only works when it's convenient for people. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, if I found something in my yard, I'd be damned if I went public with it at this point.
I get a display case and keep it in the studio and be like, I don't know where that came from. It's a fake. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no, that's just a plaster cast. Don't worry about it. That's fine.
That's not a real Sasquatch skeleton. That's just, I made it out of paper mache for fun.
And that's the thing too. Like if you did like Nepalese, they have the Yeti skull, which is a very holy object for them. And they don't allow people to test it. And people are like, oh, they don't want people to test it because it's fake. They don't want people to test it because it's not real. No, they don't want people to test it because if turns out if it's something that is unknown, it's going to get taken away from them.
I mean, on top of the fact that you're going to end up destroying it too, because, you know, if they start taking samples from it, then this place is going to want a sample. Then this place is going to want a sample. And before long, you know, it's missing half the bottom jaw because people wanted samples to be able to test and run on this thing.
Yeah. And this is like a holy item to them. This is part of their religion, or at least the monks that won temples. They pray to it. They love it. It's theirs. It's been there for 300-400 years. Why would you let somebody come in and start plucking at it, I guess?
See, I'm kind of wondering too if so like from their descriptions, they're usually like a darker color, like a blonde or like a brown. They're never really depicted as white. So I'm kind of curious if the white was a connotation that people created to try to make it seem like it was more elusive, like ridiculous, or if it was something that maybe even they kind of just like laid in there so that people would be looking for this thing when it actually looks like this, and then they can keep their heritage to themselves because everybody's looking for this big white ape instead of what it actually looks like and described as. Because, I mean, they're not even described as big. Usually they're only described at max, what, like 5 or 6 feet? Like, they're not even as big as, like, the typical, like, Sasquatch idea.
Yeah. I feel like at this point people are just... You want to have this knowledge out, and you want to be like, yes, this is real, but you don't want people to go and look for what this is because you would ruin that mythology of it. So they're like, yeah, no, it just looks like this. Go find one. Don't worry about it, guys.
See, which is like a hit or miss on that one too, because it's like you keep the information here for yourself to preserve it, but at the same time, if people aren't talking about it, then you're preserving the information only for yourself. And then once you die off, then it gets lost. Like, that's what happens to a lot of like the Native American lore and creatures and mythology, is that it's like, it's a very oral tradition and they keep it amongst their people. So then it's like, if people aren't sharing those stories, nobody knows about it. And then think about how many different amazing mythology creatures that could explain a bunch of different weird stuff that's happening now, you know, are just kind of lost in time, or they're only known by a tribe and nobody hears word about them. Because it's like, there's a good handful that everybody talks about. But even within that, like, we all talk about skinwalkers, but then you actually try to go to somebody who's Navajo and ask them about skinwalkers, and then it's like, they don't give out any information. So it's like, where is the information coming from in the first place that we have? Is it from, like, researchers that are non-Navajo doing their own research and kind of coming to their own conclusions? Are they getting the stories from them? Or are we completely just on the wrong path of what these things even are in the first place? And the Navajo just wants to keep them stories to themselves, so they just don't correct anybody and let them just keep running down the trail and whatever they're doing.
I feel like it's that last one, because we seem to take other people's mythologies and other people's lore and stories, and we twist them and we ruin them when we get them.
Perfect example. Look at the Wendigo. The way everybody thinks the Wendigo looks is not even close to how it was depicted or said by the Native Americans. It was more of like a zombie creature that was just like a lanky, like, human with like decaying flesh color. It was never described as this like giant deer-headed beast-like creature. That was through like settlers hearing these stories and then trying to demonize the culture by adding the insinuation of like what people describe as like a Baphomet, or like the, you know, the satanic goat. They kind of just mix that in to make it seem more savage and completely lost track of what the actual story and depictions are.
Yeah. Well, that's like when people like say, I'm not personally religious, but if I was telling somebody like, oh, I can't tell you what Jesus Christ looked like because that's a secret. So they take it and they run with it and they make their own story of it. I don't know if I would rather them make, oh, zombie person rose from the grave and gave me an Easter egg is what the story turns into, because I'm trying to keep my mythology real and safe within my culture. Would I rather them think that Jesus is this zombie that rose from the grave that hands out Easter bunnies, or would I rather tell them and have them take it and make it their own mythology? Like, that's what we're doing with a lot of cultures. We're taking it and making it our own mythology, like the Wendigo, like Thunderbird, even Sasquatch possibly, because that was Native American to begin with.
I mean,
taking it and making the stories ours.
Even off of that stuff, like, just to drop a little tidbit for anybody out there, considering the time and date and what was going on in the region, Jesus would not have been white, first of all. And second of all, his name was not Jesus to begin with. It was, what was the name? Yeshua? Something like that. It was, like, those characters didn't exist in the Hebrew language at the time. So it's like, even the depiction that we have as modern day Jesus isn't actually, like, anything close to who he was or what he looked like or even what his name was. And then we even...
What we did to that story. I mean...
I mean, look at December. Look at the whole birth story, saying it's in December. But you really start digging into any of that, and nobody knows for sure. Everybody kind of has like different ideas. Like I've heard some people throw possibly September. I've heard some people throw the middle of summer. But it seems like everybody group agrees that like his birthday would not have been the end of December. That was just correlating in pagan traditions with Christian traditions when they were trying to get everybody convert over to Christianity and trying to blend the Christian belief or the pagan beliefs into the Christianity so people would more easily be able to convert over.
And a lot of the dates and a lot of the stories and a lot of, like you said, the birthdays are taken from even older religions, like Egyptian religions have December as a birthday for like the sun god. And Jesus is the
sun god.
So now he's now our December birthday.
And I always find it funny too that they usually depict him with the yellow ring around his head too, which seems like it's kind of another connotation of the whole sun god concept.
Yeah, which circles back to, that's why I think Native communities keep their mythology close at heart, because we just take it and we run with it and we make our own stories for it, and then we turn it into our own thing instead of what it's supposed to be.
And I mean, I don't want to say everything is like based around like white culture, because that's not necessarily what it is. It's all European culture, that nothing mattered, quote. I'm not saying this for myself, but just in general, like nothing mattered until the Europeans found it, because like no history is really recorded from any other perspective than the European perspective, and then spread out from there. And then it's like, oh, the Europeans discovered this, when it's like they didn't discover it. They just learned of these people's heritage and background that already existed, but they still tweaked it to be able to fit into their connotation, because everything is 100% written and viewed from European as the start.
Yeah, to make it a little more palatable for the people at the time.
Yep. Because that was who they saw as like the non-savages, even though other people just had a different way of life. It doesn't mean that they weren't necessarily just as advanced as them. They just had different things that were important to them, and they progressed in different ways. Like, they were kind of modernizing and building into the whole concept of technology and all this through Europe, but then other places were more built into the whole idea of like remaining natural, doing natural remedies, building up the natural ability to do things. Like, they had different ideas on what they wanted to do, and all it took was the Europeans figured out how to use essentially like germ warfare at the time and took out all of these cultures. And then they were like, all right, this is the history that we say. So this is now the history that there is, because there's nobody here to tell us any different now.
I mean, honestly picture future 30, 40 years from now, they go to just a regular gravesite and they dig up our ancestors and they put them in a museum. How mind blowing that would be for us.
Especially if they don't know how our technology works, they'll just be like, they had these little devices that they would cast magic and speak to other people on the other side, because they don't know how to turn it on. It's just a black screen.
You go to the Smithsonian, your grandmother's there, because they didn't understand, like, oh, this is a native skeleton. Like, we did that to past generations of people. We just took their stuff and they're like, look at how crazy this is. Let's put this in a museum. It's like, that's somebody's body. Like, I was mind blown when I found, like, they have a new law passed in some of the Western states now, that if you can prove that that's your ancestor, if you can prove that's part of your tribe, you can take your body back now.
That's awesome. I'm glad they got something like that.
They made it so that it's kind of very hard now. You have to, the way museums got their artifacts.
It just has to sound good on paper, but that doesn't mean it's actually plausible and going to work that way. It just makes them sound good on paper. Like, you can get this back, but good luck.
If you can prove it. But the way the museums got their artifacts back in the day weren't on paper. So it's hard for people to prove, yes, here's a contract I had with the Natural History Museum of New York saying you can use grandma's bones for 30 days and then give it back.
I mean, even with that, they're not going to DNA test them either and be like, all right, this shares the same DNA as you. It's okay. You'd be like, that is my DNA. I can tell you and prove it to you right now. And they'll be like, well, you have no way to prove this unless we give you a sample. And if you don't have a sample, then you can't prove it. So, like, good luck. Because we're not going to destroy it just to prove you, for you to be proved wrong is how they'd probably word it.
No, and that goes with how hard it is for us now to prove, like the Sasquatch bones. They could have buried them and Native American people could have known that. Would you tell us that? Would you tell us where that graveyard is to know that what we did to dig those bones up?
They saw what we did to the Native burial grounds. Well, I don't want to say we, because I'm not linked to this, but just like American settlers did to their burial grounds. So it's like, why the hell would they tell you where anything else is at?
I mean, would you tell us where your creatures that you revered were buried when you saw what we did to the rest of everything else that we took and made ours?
You'd completely spin the story regardless, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I've often wondered, the whole, like, giant skeleton thing that was going on before the Smithsonian completely took that over, I've been curious how many of those could have even potentially been Sasquatch skeletons, like, maybe some of the smaller ones.
Oh, the, why do I want to say it starts with an N and I can't remember the word for it? Nephism? That's
oh, the Nephilim?
Thank you, yes.
Yep. Because, I mean, that's one of those stories that kind of, like, underlies a bunch of stuff, too, that it's just told from a bunch of different perspectives, but that mm-hmm. idea consists between a lot of stuff. Because you got, like, the natives, the sky people, that they would, like, interbreed with them, so it kind of fits that whole Nephilim concept. Then you got, like, the Anunnaki for the Sumerians. So, like, it's all the same idea, the same connotation. It's just told from different perspectives. So, like, the more you dig into that, the more you're like, all right, you know, maybe they weren't gods as people perceive them, but there was definitely some type of advanced race that was mixing DNA just to see if either one, maybe they could live on this planet because maybe they didn't have the right physique to be able to suit to actually live here. Or two, they're just doing it for the sake of doing it. I mean, it's no different than people now. I mean, if we had the ability to do anything, you know, we're not going to question whether or not it's morally right. We're just going to do it for the sake of doing it.
Yeah. We've, I think, lost a lot of information in the past from taking it the wrong way from people.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I guess.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
And I guess before we start wrapping towards the end, mm-hmm. I know that you had some paranormal experiences, and I'd love to get into people's personal experiences. So if you're willing to, I'd love to dive into some of those before we start wrapping up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've had many paranormal experiences. I guess growing up in houses I've lived in, I lived in, I'll give you one example because there's probably 1,000 examples, but this is the strangest one. I used to live in Taunton, and it was kind of in a wooded area, East Taunton. If anybody knows the area, you'll know it quite well. And a lot of people, the 5 or 6 houses around the corners of us, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just a weird, strange area that was dark a lot, more than even in the daytime. Like the way the woods were, the way the houses were, the way the people were. It was just an uncomfortable neighborhood. Cute as hell, but uncomfortable and weird.
But just like a dark presence from something that happened in the past, kind of a feel?
And a lot of people in the houses around us all got sick in weird ways, I guess. Like weird sicknesses early on. A lot of kids got sick. I'm not sure if it was the ground itself, if it just happened to be that a large group of people just suddenly.
Was it like terminal illnesses or just like off the wall rare illnesses? Yes. Terminal?
It was terminal. And also we ended up staying in the house because my aunt and my uncle who lived there both had passed of us another terminal illness also. So there was probably 5 or 6 people surrounding us that were also sick. So the house I was in at the time, my mother didn't like staying there because it was so scary. It was so weird. So she would take my sisters and head down to my grandmother's house to sleep over when they didn't have school. That's how freaky the house was. Nobody would want to stay there alone. So I was like, you know what? I'm 18. I got the whole house to myself. Summertime, there's a pool in the back. I'll stay here by myself. And I'm okay. So I was there one night. And I would stay up until very, like, 3-4 in the morning, however much. It was the summertime. I had no school, whatever. And I was laying in bed, and I had an overhead fan. And the fan suddenly, you know when you just hear your fan slowly shut off and it gets quieter and quieter until it stops?
Mm-hmm.
When you have those, like, rickety overhead fans. That happened with the fan. And I was like, that's weird. Like, maybe the power went out. Anything. I have no clue. Then the outside lights start going off and on, flickering off and on, off and on, off and on. I'm like, I get up, I start clicking the lights. Nothing's going on, but the outside lights are going off and on. Then I hear something in the basement. And at this point, the house had already been strange enough that you would see stuff out of the corner of your eyes. You would hear stuff everywhere. We had one time I had a guy knock on the door. There's a long driveway. You can see the whole driveway from the window to the street. So there's no like blind spots. I had a guy knock on the door that was just an old white guy dressed in a black suit. And I was like, that's weird. I have no clue who this is. I'm not opening the door for him. And I looked, there was no car. And I looked again and he was just gone. So it was completely unexplainable where this guy went, because you'd have to walk past the window I was at to get to the street. So random people, random figures showing up. At one point, my mother and I both saw the same strange thing months apart, but didn't tell each other until we were out of the house because we didn't think each other would believe what we saw.
Isn't it weird when you end up in those situations where it's like you don't know who to talk to it about, and then there's two people that both are like, can't tell anybody about this, but you end up having the same experience?
And it was really strange because it was probably years after we left the house. She's like, I never told you what I saw there. And I was like, did you see this? And she was like, oh my God. Like, we just both went ice cold. Because it was impossible for what we saw, just a wolf head in peeking around the corner of a hallway.
Like a dog man type of thing?
An actual wolf.
Oh, so straight wolf head.
Which made zero sense for that to be in the house, or my mother and I to see it on separate occasions, months apart. That we didn't even mention it to each other because it was so, there was no explanation. So we were both like, well, we probably just saw, we're just dreaming, but there's no way.
Got some shapeshifters in the area.
Yeah. So all this had led up to the day, and I still would stay there by myself because, like I said, I'm 18 years old. It's summertime. There's an in-ground pool. I'll put up with some shit. I'll stay there. So the fan stops. And when the fan stops, all the lights outside, all the spotlights start going off and on, off and on, off and on. I get up. The lights are off. I'm like, okay, somebody's screwing with me. Something's going on because there's no explanation for the way the lights are going off. I'm going to call the cops because I think somebody's in the house. That's the only explanation for this. Call the cops. I'm like, look, I'm by myself. Can you guys just please come do a walk around? And now it's like 4 or 5 in the morning, the sun's starting to come up. I go outside to wait for them. The lights are flickering. All of the house lights are flickering off and on. No sense, no pattern, no nothing. I'm standing in the driveway. The second I see the cop car come down the street, all the lights go on. And then they just stay on. Which is impossible because I was laying down to go to sleep, so all the lights were off besides the fan. So every light in the house now is burning. So now I look crazy as hell. So I bring the cop in. I'm like, can you just do like a walkabout? Like I called somebody to come pick me up. I'm not staying here. I'm too nervous. So we go around the outside of the house, no footprints, no doors open, no windows open, nothing. We go downstairs into the basement and there's a room like next to the laundry room that's full of like boxes, furniture, whatnot. And he unclips his gun. He unbuttons the gun and he says, do you have a dog in there? And we had no pets. I'm like, nope, there's no animals in this house. And I'm on this, I'm like getting goosebumps now thinking about it. It was just the strangest series of events.
Especially because of the wolf thing. Did you tell him about the wolf thing, or was that like he came to that conclusion just on his own?
No, I didn't tell him. I didn't even mention this to anybody, the wolf thing, until after he moved out to my mother. And he unclips his gun. He's like, do you have a dog in there? I'm like, nope, I have zero animals. He's like, all right, I just heard like scuffling in there or something. And he opens the door and you can't even really get in there. Like I said, it's furniture, it's boxes. It's not a room we even use. And he just kind of shines his flashlight around and he leaves the room, shuts the door. And I'm like, all right, my ride's going to be here in 2 minutes. Can you just please like wait for me? I'll get some stuff together. Go outside, lock up the house. Shut all the lights off. He actually was, and it's weird because I would have assumed the cops are like, all right, you're set. Like, nobody's here. We're going to take off. He waited in the driveway with me for like 10 minutes. Like, I feel like he was just as unnerved as I was from the situation. And I did not stay there alone probably for a couple months after that.
I wonder how many police actually believe in paranormal stuff, because it seems like they may not want to always admit it, but I feel like almost every cop has dealt with something like that. That's just like an unexplainable situation that it's just like, what do you do with that? You put it in the back of your mind and save it for one day. But
exactly. And I remember years after we moved out, my mother and I were comparing stories about this house we had stayed. I mean, this is the same house. Like I said, I was by myself a lot in this house because my mother didn't want to stay there because it was so unnerving. I developed a camera, like those little take your own pictures and then have it developed type of camera.
Oh, they'll throw away disposable ones?
Yeah. I used to use those all the time. I developed a picture I developed a camera roll. There was a picture of me sleeping on it.
That's ridiculously creepy. Yeah,
I still have the picture around here somewhere because it's so unexplainable who took this picture. I can't prove to anybody that I tell this story to nobody was in the house with me because it's my story. I was by myself at the time and I know I was. But there was a picture probably like 2 inches away from my face of me sleeping in a bed.
I mean, even if you go into the paranormal aspect of it, that if you had like the camera sitting on the edge of your desk, that means that there may have been some type of like energy release or some type of like assertion of energy that may have also caused that picture to be taken. Because the whole paranormal picture concept seems to be like a commonplace thing that either one, you have the battery drain or you have a battery surge. And when you have battery surges, then there's weird malfunctions like cameras actually taking pictures.
But it was the kind that you had to do the little ch-ch-ch with the wheel and all that, like those old throwaway cameras.
So it's something that's definitely like, there is a physical concept to it as much as there is some type of paranormal off the wall concept to it too.
That house was mind blowing.
Have you ever looked into that house to see if there's any like history to it at all?
I looked into the land. The house itself was built. My aunt and my uncle built that house. I looked into the land. They did a lot of digging, I think the land itself, I don't want to say like the land was bad, like in Poltergeist, like they moved the headstones, but left the bodies. Like, I think it was one of those situations. But my uncle brought a lot of things, and I hate to blame other cultures for like stuff like this, but my uncle brought a lot of things from overseas when he was in the wars.
Yeah. Those will definitely have some dark things linked to them.
We ended up with a lot of trinkets after they passed that are just like, from he was in like the Korean War, Vietnam War, stuff like that, that probably shouldn't have left the country, that left the country, that were in that house.
Taking like objects off of like soldiers and stuff that were dead. And
even just like statues, like mythological statues, religious statues, stuff like that, that he brought overseas that might have been better where they were.
I mean, shit, even thinking about like the concept of, for lack of a better term, like a curse, you know, if there's an American soldier that's buying stuff in a Vietnamese market during the Vietnam War or anything like that, like who's to say that they're not like, hey, you're not supposed to be here. I don't like you. So they're going to be super duper polite to you, but all the same, they're going to be putting some type of hex or curse onto that item that they know you're about to buy.
It was definitely a monkey paw situation with some of the items in that house, I'm sure.
And then once you amass a bunch of them, then that, I mean, you could almost create like a doorway at that point.
Yeah. I would love to be able to go back to that house now with the older, with like the equipment I have now and see. Because at the time, I mean, when we were living there, we didn't want to rile anything else up, but you didn't even have to rile it up. You just walk in the house and it's just strange.
See, it makes me wonder if the current residents would let you investigate because they've had their own weird experiences, or if they'd look at you like you're batshit crazy and say, get off my lawn.
Funny enough, the current resident is still family.
Oh, there you go. Even better.
But I would feel bad going in there if it's quiet and riling it back up for her because of how bad it was when we were living there.
Well, if they ever go to sell the house, then you have a little bit of a leeway to just stir everything up as much as you want and leave.
I'm going to go through. I'm going to be like, yes, I'd like to buy it and just pretend there. And I'll be there with like a little ghost box. I'm like, ma'am, are you putting an offer in on this house or are you investigating?
Both.
Yeah, both, actually. I don't even know if I was given that house if I would live there.
I mean,
it was bad.
I've always been into that kind of weird stuff where it's like, of course, when you're actually in the situation, it's definitely horrifying. But at the same time, though, it's like curiosity killed the cat. And I feel like my curiosity would get the best of me in that situation. That if somebody's like, here's a haunted house, you can have it and live here, I'd be like, my mind would want to say no, but my heart would be like, yes.
I don't know if it was a house so much as the artifacts, but it was something. It was strange and it was something.
Where do those artifacts end up going? Like, have you seen if like anything kind of followed the artifacts if they're staying within your family?
So I had two of them at my house for a little while. I had one of the statues at my house. My mother was moving and I held on to some of her stuff for her in the interim. And I had them on a bookshelf in my parlor or my living room. I use the term parlor like I'm in the 1940s.
It sounds fancy.
It is. I was in my parlor. And I remember taking a nap on the couch and the figurines were behind me on the bookshelf. And I had had probably the worst nightmare I had had in quite some time, that something was lording over me, just a dark something was staring at me, watching me sleep. And I woke up completely horrified and realized the figurines were behind me. That was, I'm assuming it was that causing it, because those were the ones from the house.
I mean, I again would still be absolutely fascinated with these things, where I wouldn't want to get rid of them. But at the same time, though,
they're
it's
no
like
longer here. I'll tell you that.
Got to get those specific boxes that are like blessed, that nothing can leave the box, but still keep it on display.
Yeah, it's. I need those boxes, like the Raggedy Ann doll from the Conjuring house. Put them there. Yeah, I think it was attached to the figurines and not the house. I just think the figurines added to maybe what was already in the land, or not the figurines, but the stuff that was taken over from overseas added to what might have already been in the land to begin with.
That's what I was going to say, because then you have two different sides of it, that you have something that is irritated that you're on their land in the first place, and then you have the other side that's irritated that you've been killing their people. So then it's like you're just kind of getting it from two ways at that point.
It is, because like I mentioned, there was a lot of sickness in that neighborhood as it was, so there had to be something there prior to that these just amplified.
See, I definitely think that that may have been one of those situations, like I talked about earlier in the show, that there were some builders and they were just like, I don't want to deal with the paperwork. Just throw them in the cement. Nobody will ever find them again.
Without a doubt. It had to be. There was no explanation. Like, it wasn't a family curse. Like, we've had other haunted houses and other stuff in the family, but it's not like it's a family curse. It was just very specific, strange things that happened only in that house. Yeah.
If you ever get an opportunity to be able to go there and check it out again, you'll have to definitely keep me posted and updated to let me know if anything goes on with the house without the totems.
I don't know if I want to now that everything's like set. I don't live in a haunted house now. I don't want to bring anything back.
You got to go on the edge of the property and keep it away from the house and just see if something pops up at the edge of the property outside. Bring it into the woods. Keep it in the woods.
It's creepy. I'll have to find that picture and send you a picture of the ghost picture, because it's completely unexplainable.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely curious. I want to see it.
It's weird. It's just a picture somebody took of me while I was sleeping, while it was in an empty house.
That probably sounds really creepy that I'm like, I want to see a picture of you sleeping, but I just
need to see this picture of you sleeping. But it's just strange that it just doesn't make any sense at all.
I mean, just like, considering it's one of the old spin cameras, that's the part that like makes it extra weird. Like if it was just a digital camera or something,
no, this was oceans of time ago. I mean, I think I was 18 or 19, so I don't want to say it's oceans of time ago, but you know what I mean? so like 60 years ago, but it was one of those yellow ones that you had to do the little spin for.
Good old Kodak.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's, I think my most unexplainable paranormal experience.
Definitely fascinating. And I totally understand where you kind of sway more towards the paranormal and stuff. Like I was saying, most people, it's like they have an experience with something and that's more so what they sway towards. So it's like, you know, you've never had any type of extraterrestrial anything. So it's kind of hard for you to believe in any of that stuff where you know, everybody sees UFOs. I mean, I've seen some weird stuff in the sky. I've never had like a physical experience with these things, but like, I still have seen weird stuff in the sky and I still haven't decided if I go kind of both ways, that human intervention is definitely a part of it. And then there is also the probability of there being other things that are completely unexplained.
Yeah. I think the paranormal intrigues me more because I've been so exposed to it. If I see a Loch Ness, if I see a Sasquatch, then that'd be great too. But for now, I've had more touchable experiences with the paranormal.
That's kind of where I'm at too. I'm a big cryptid guy, but I've had more paranormal experiences than anything else too.
I mean, I've seen some strange creatures, but nothing that I could identify as that was definitely not something normal, I guess.
And it's one of those experiences that you pray for, but at the same time, though, it's like, I want to see a Sasquatch. But then if you're in the middle of the woods, it's pitch black, and there's this 10-foot ape creature in front of you, you might change your idea on actually wanting to see that.
I want to see it far away in a picture somebody else took.
I mean, even if it's on the other side of the woods for me, if you were like still physically actually seeing it with your own eyes, it's just like, how fast could that thing be right in front of me from where it is right now?
We have construction up the street from my house. And this was probably like 12, 13 years ago, because I had my dog at the time. I was walking her. And outside of the construction, I saw something. And this is the only term I can use for it because it makes sense. I saw something like lope across the street. And its hind legs were higher than its front legs. So it looked like a really elongated type of lynx, but huge. And it was so, my brain could not comprehend what it was at all. And I think that's the closest I've come to actually seeing a cryptid type of creature. And I turned around and ran myself home with my dog.
Is that somewhat near like the Huckamuck Swamp, like the whole triangle area?
I'm in Brockton, which falls right outside the triangle. But it wasn't even anything that I have seen explained or drawn elsewhere. So I think my brain went white, and I just turned around and ran because it was so it looked like a human when they do like bear walks, like a bear type of walk when you're like crunched over on your hands and you're running.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of looked like that, but it was an animal. Not so close as I've come to a cryptid encounter, but paranormal, too many.
If it makes you feel any better, my one creature encounter that I had, I know I've told it a few times in the story, so I won't completely go back over the story, but like my first instinct wasn't to figure out what it was, look at it for that long. The second I laid eyes on this thing, I was just out, 100% out. The picture's forever locked in my mind, but I was out.
Was it like a beast type of creature, like a Sasquatchy type of creature?
What I believe that it could have been, just at least from my research, is like the typical, like the native depiction of like a Wendigo. And it seems like a lot of the connotation around it kind of fits that, but I'm not saying guaranteed that what it was, but it was definitely this tall, lanky, decaying flesh looking colored creature with long black, like greasy hair on the top of its head. And I saw it down in some, like, basically like a tunnel system that was underneath this, like, abandoned hospital.
Oh, I would have been horrified. Yeah, I would have tucked tail myself and just took off at that point, because what are you going to do?
I heard a voice in my right ear. Nobody was in the room. There was just me and two other people there with me. And as I walked in the room and I was leading, I heard this voice to the right of me and said, run. And as I heard that, I saw this thing standing up. So I was out. So it was like half paranormal, half creature mix, which again kind of leads more into the, if people believe in Wendigos, that kind of like a concept or that type of being, because there is the, you know, like the more spiritual paranormal type side to that being rather than it just being a straight physical creature.
Yeah. You can't fight a Wendigo. It's best just to run.
Mm-hmm. Because as soon as they're done eating you, they're still going to be hungry. So you just,
yeah, they're never full. Just take off. It's easier.
Yep. And they're just going to get bigger with each kill. But I guess with that, I always like to kind of wrap up the show with words of wisdom. So if there was any words of wisdom you could bestow on the listeners, be it to other people, you know, possibly trying to start their show, or people that don't know what to do when it comes to their paranormal experiences or anything, what might be some words of wisdom you might want to bestow on them?
I mean, I guess I could say just I don't know. I want to be deep about this, but at the same time, I just want to tell people, like, believe what you want to believe. I mean, your truth is your truth. You saw what you saw. You can't, there's people, like, I told the story about the weird loping lynx I saw. I know I saw it. I don't know what it was, but you have to believe in your truths. And that's my words of wisdom.
That's actually some great words of wisdom. I know you're a little bit paranoid about it when we first wanted to start off, but honestly, that is some great words of wisdom, because
thank you.
Nobody can take, your experience away from you. But unfortunately, it seems like a lot of the time you have an experience and you try to explain it to people and they try to tell you it's this, it's this, it's this. And they kind of put their own ideas in your head, which steers you away from what you actually saw and makes you start believing more what people are putting in your head than your actual self and what you actually experienced.
Yeah, you have to stop thinking that it sounds goofy coming out of your mouth, is what I've learned. Like, telling stories is your story. You can't taper it off to make it sound, I guess, more believable or more natural or truthful to people, because your story is your story. It is what it is.
Find your audience too. Don't be telling your stories to people that don't want to believe in anything, you know.
No, don't,
at least go
don't
in with somebody that's going to go with a fresh mind and at least take it for what it is. Exactly. And give you their thoughts and opinions on it, instead of just, like, you know, going to somebody that doesn't believe in any of the paranormal, mm-hmm. and telling them a paranormal story. It doesn't matter what you say, they're going to be like, bullshit.
Yeah, don't go to the cashier at Shaw's and tell them that you saw a Wendigo. You have to pick your audience correctly.
And with that, if anybody wanted to come and find your show, find anything that you're doing, where can everybody come and find you on the internet, possibly even share some of their encounters with you and follow and listen to your show?
I'm only right now on YouTube. You can find me on General Crypt Tidbits with General Tidbits on YouTube. Anybody who wants to come on, talk about their encounters, alien, paranormal, cryptid, anything they are coming out with, any type of books, movies they want to promote, I'm always down for that. I love having people on. I love talking to people about the unknown, whatever they want to talk about, I'm down for.
Absolutely. I'll have to make an appearance on your show at some point. And for all the good listeners out there, I will make sure that I include your links down in the show description so everybody can find it quick and easy. Because as we were talking about in the beginning, as a community, we all got to keep elevating each other, rise together, because that's the only way we're going to get anywhere with any of this stuff.
No, thank you for having me on. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. Thank you for making the time to come on. And I'm looking forward to the next time I get to see you. Maybe I'll even see you at Squonkapalooza again this year if you're planning on going again.
Might have to make that 8-hour drive again.
Hey, I'll actually be speaking this year too, so I'll be hopefully more towards the I think they're talking about like inside vending and stuff, so maybe I'll luck out and I'll get an indoor one, because last year I was getting swarmed by wasps because right behind me was the slushy truck, and everybody knows how much sugar is involved with the slushy truck. So like at any given point I was sitting there and I had like 8 wasps flying around me, and I was telling my daughter, like, don't smack them, don't interact, just do your thing and they'll just go about you. But if you start acknowledging them and smacking at them, then you're going to get stung by them.
I would have died.
If you guys enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. Greatly appreciate you guys when you do that. And if you guys leave a 5-star review, then I will read it on the show, of course, and give you guys a big shout out. And anybody that you guys think might enjoy this episode, I don't care if they're a friend, I don't care if they're an enemy, coworkers, cousins, family, all of that. Share the show with them. Keep expanding the show, because the only way it's ever going to happen is with your guys' help, which I greatly appreciate. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, be it that you want to be a guest on the show, you want to share some fan art, you possibly just want to have a conversation in general, you want me to be a guest on your show, you want to sponsor the show, any of that awesome stuff, you guys can get a hold of me through social media. Instagram and Facebook are the ones I am the most active on. Or you guys can email me at inquiriesofallrealitypodcast.outlook.com. Or if you guys are looking for podcast production services, you guys can email me at open_minds_media@outlook.com. Or you guys can go to the link tree, fill the submission form. There are multiple submission forms depending on what you're trying to contact me for, so make sure you guys click on the right one. And I do respond to every single message that I get from you guys, so make sure you guys check your spam or junk folders and make sure that nothing got missed in the process. And everything that I mentioned is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.